Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well. I got up bright and early this morning. You're not going to believe this. 3:45 a.m.
Wow.
Put my baby on a 6 o'clock plane to Alaska. She texted just a little while ago. She's halfway, so she at least got as far as Minneapolis. So.
There you go, and no TSA problem?
Not as far as I know. We'll see what happens between now and then. And the story is she's going to get a chance to see moose and bear and have all kinds of nice cultural experiences this week.
That's right, and spend a week in Alaska.
But talk about cultural experiences. My brother and his crew, they're coming up Friday. We're hitting a baseball game and NASCAR. So I'll have plenty to report.
Coast to coast. The Paytons are having fun coast to coast.
That's right. But we're going to have a good time this morning. We have a studio full. We got our buddy Chris Deakle back in the studio keeping an eye on us.
That's right.
And so we're delighted to have him and want to give him a shout out. A little bit later in the program, we're going to hear with Rob Tate with Possible Now. And we're going to talk with Jeff Hanna. I'm not going to try to pronounce the name of the company, but he's the trade show guy that we've been talking about so much
lately. That's right. I'm excited about that.
I am too. And, you know, we got that trade show video that Beach put together for us.
Right.
We've been throwing that all over the internet. So that's going to be a fun conversation, and we'll try to learn a little bit of something about that. But it is my distinct pleasure to introduce first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, gentleman with Wells Fargo. Understand he has some responsibility and interest in the small business market here in the Metro Atlanta area. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Sean Mabee. Welcome to the studio, man.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What is your title and what is your role over there at Wells Fargo?
The official title is Small Business Director. In English, what that means is I get to wake up every morning and work with the folks at Wells Fargo and some great folks in the community, like the Atlanta Metro Chamber and various other organizations around Atlanta, to help our small business customers here in Atlanta be more successful. I believe that without our small business owners, we'll never get out of the rut that we're in right now for the economy and the community, and I get to wake up every day and figure out how we can do that better.
Now, how does, like Wells Fargo, they're a big bank, right? But it's important for you to stay connected to the community and get kind of integrate yourself with the small business. How do you go about doing that? That seems like, you know, small business people are very nimble, and I would think that's kind of a challenge for us to think as small business people, oh, I better go with a big bank. Can you share kind of the benefits of working with the Wells Fargo?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we don't like the term big bank. We like to out-local the nationals and out-national the locals
there
is what we always say.
I like
good.
That.
I'll go with that.
And we really do try to have people in our stores that is more than just product. Obviously, all the banks in town have similar products a lot of the time. And what we try to really do is differentiate what we do by having people in our stores that actually can help a small business owner with more than just product, more than just lending. Those things are very, very important. But doing things around education, we talk all the time about it doesn't matter if you're a brand new small business right now or an existing small business. You all have the same challenge, and
right.
That is operating in an economy that we've never had to operate in before. And so outside of that, we offer education for those folks and resources for those folks. We have what I call WebMD for small businesses. It's a website that any small business owner can use to go out and get information. We do a ton of stuff in our community. You have mentioned the Atlanta Metro Chamber. We sponsor several education series. I know one of our guests has been to a couple of those things, and I know a fan of this show and a friend of this show, Jim Beach, does a lot of stuff. So we put our money where our mouth is when it comes to outreaching to small business to help them understand how to be successful in this economy.
Now, what about in terms of relationship building? Are you that's where I would think that you would have tremendous value to a small business. Like our business, one of our objectives is to franchise this business in different markets. And to have a bank that has a national footprint that we can tap and say, hey, Mr. Wells Fargo banker, you know, you've helped me out here locally and now we're ready to expand. Do you have any resources in, you know, in Minneapolis or somewhere else in the country that might be a phone call away for you, and you might be able to kind of jumpstart my operation there, I would think.
Yeah, we have similar setups all across the country. I mean, we are a very large bank, you said, and sometimes when we talk about banking, large is not necessarily a good word.
Right.
But like you said, if you want to go anywhere in the nation, we're going to have someone there that we can connect you with that can help you get into that market, that can help you understand what that market is and help you understand how to be successful in that market. Absolutely.
You know, Lee, it seems like all the small business owners that come through here as guests, they're full of vim and vinegar. Everything's very positive. So I wonder if we get a little bit of a skewed view. But let's ask Sean, because he's out there in the trenches with these guys. Is the outlook for small business positive right now? And if so, what is some evidence of that?
Well, I guess it all depends on what radio station you listen to or what TV station you listen to. And
well, if you read the mainstream media, it's very negative.
All
you do is
yeah.
hear about bad things happening. I know, because that's what Stone was saying, is in here we deal with business owners every single day.
Up.
Every person who comes in here is wagging their tail and is proud of something.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think every tough situation is somebody else's opportunity. We do a survey with Gallup every 6 months. And the most recent one came out, had some really positive news and some cautionary tale. I think that is the case. Small business owners are more optimistic than they were this time last year, which is the good news. 56% will see that they have a positive outlook for their financial situation, but it's still not where it needs to be.
Right.
People are still looking to figure out how to operate in what everybody's calling this new normal, because it really is. We're never going to go back to where we were. From a lending environment, I mean, that's some of the challenges.
So those
that
days
we had.
Are over of me just calling you up and you give me a big loan?
On
my word?
On your word, yes, though I'm sure you're an honest man.
With a good credit rating.
Yeah, but we're not going to do too many of those. But, it's important for us to go out and to make sure people also understand that small business is not just about lending money. We are the number one small business lender. I mean, we did almost $500 million in lending this year alone.
Wow.
In Atlanta.
Just in Atlanta?
Just in Atlanta.
Wow.
13,000 small business owners were the number one SBA lender. We were the first bank ever to lend over $1 billion in a fiscal year in SBA, and we did it just this last fiscal year. So we are lending. It's tougher today than it was 2 years ago to get a loan, but it has to be.
Right. It's a good thing.
Some of what got our country into the challenge is some of those lending practices. And but it's more than just lending, like I said. And we do our best to lend when we can. And we are open for lending. We want to lend. But we also know that it's more than just lending. There's a lot of small businesses out there that need other things. Cash management is a huge, huge opportunity for lots of small business lenders because they just don't understand the difference if you get paid 3 days later or you get paid the next day, the float on that money, how much money you can make.
Right.
You know, if you got a 7% differential between that, and you can make your profit just on that alone. So it's more than just lending for us. And like I said, a big part of it is helping people be educated around how to be successful.
Now, can you walk us through, say right now we bank with another bank. Now, if we were going to switch to you guys, walk us through what that process looks like. How do you learn about my business so you can best serve me? Is there a meeting? Do I meet with somebody in the branch that's going to...
Well, I think it probably starts with good seats at the Saturday's ball game.
Right.
And it probably grows from
that's
there.
That's what
right?
I go by. Which one has the best tickets to the sport?
Well, actually, I was wondering if I go to UC NASCAR. that's a great question. We have people in all of our stores that are specifically trained. They're called business specialists.
Right.
And so that's the best way to start. Before you go into a store, if you want to do your homework, you can go to our website. It's www.wellsfargo.com/biz. And there's some great resources on there to prepare you for that meeting, to kind of see what do you offer, what are those things. But a website just never does the same thing as face-to-face meeting.
We're big on face-to-face in here. Yep. This is what our business is all about.
Yep. You go in, you talk to them, and that is the first thing they're going to do. They are going to sit down, and they're going to ask you questions. They are trained to not lead with product. They are trained to ask questions, understand where you are. We use a business lifecycle guide that kind of will map out where you are, whether it's a seed, startup, growth, maturity, all those things, and we'll use that as your personalized map. and then ask you questions to figure out where you are and start that conversation and hopefully win the relationship. It's a competitive industry out there, and we know there's lots of people focus on small business. But an interesting stat where people say they're focused on small business, but if you look at businesses from $100,000 to $500,000, $100,000 to $500,000 in revenue, only half of them have ever been solicited by anybody besides their primary bank. And so we the banking industry says they're interested, but very few people are kind of really putting their money where their mouth is. And that tells me there's a lot of underserved small businesses out
there. So that's an area of interest for you, size company?
Yeah, absolutely. Where we look, as a bank, we will work with anybody. The specific segment that I'm building, trying to help succeed, is that from a dollar to about $2 million a year in revenue.
Right.
And if you get up higher than $2 million, I work with another group, and we'll get you connected with that group. But we really want to focus on that
$2 million and below.
$2 million and below, because those are the companies that are going to be hiring the people. Those are the companies that are going to be helping our communities. And let's face it, it starts with the community first, and it grows from there. If a community is successful, then the economy becomes successful. They add jobs, and it ripples from there.
Now, that the relationships that you kind of leverage to build that is, you mentioned the Metro Chamber. Are there any other business associations or any groups that you're involved in that are kind of help you reach that market?
We're involved with all the local chambers, lots of organizations, lots of nonprofits. ACE, Access for Capital for Entrepreneurs, is a nonprofit we're having some conversations with right now. Quite frankly, if we can't lend money to someone, we want to connect you with somebody that might be able to.
Right.
So we try to have a network of nonprofits, a network of community, all across Atlanta. Specifically, we're here to talk about Atlanta, but we do it all across the Southeast.
So did you catch him glancing at Jeff when he said they'd work with anybody a little while ago? You didn't catch that. You were too ingrained in the conversation. I got to believe that if you have the right banker who is genuinely invested in your success and there to help you, it's probably can be a real quarterback for getting to other professionals that you need, CPA, legal. Is that the case?
It's absolutely the case, not only internally with the bank itself. So we pride ourselves on is if you work with a business specialist, you get a team of people, and it's all in-house. They have a team that works with you, so they can handle your merchant services. They can handle your payroll. They can handle insurance for you, all those things. But to your point, externally, they can connect you with people that they're doing business with.
Because they're out in the community and meeting these people and learning about them, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what we tell people, is that any small business owner, one of the biggest mistakes we see in small business owners is they typically, don't know the term you use, but they got that fire, right? They're out there and they want to do it, and they tend to be, they're charging up that hill, and they turn around, there's no one with them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so they need a team of people, and we tell every small business owner, you need to have a good attorney, you need to have a good accountant, you need to have a good banker, and those three need to be talking to one another. If they talk to one another and they're involved with each other, that's going to help them be flexible no matter what happens. Lots of people ask about, the presidential election and politics, and that's just not my place to talk about. But I tell people, be prepared no matter what happens.
Right.
You're not going to have as much. The only control you have is your one vote. After that, you're going to have to be able to be flexible and deal with whatever happens. And if you have that team of people that involves that banker, involves that CPA, and involves that accountant or the attorney, at a minimum, you'll be flexible enough to do that. And we can connect you, though we can't say this is going to be a great one and we recommend just this one, but we obviously bank a lot of those people and can connect those groups. Absolutely, Stone.
Now, is it a good plan for a small business, even if they've never had a loan before, to take out a small loan and repay it? Is that something that's beneficial?
It's one of the it's probably the second biggest mistake that we see is that people that mix their personal and their business together.
Right.
So they may begin by funding their small business on their personal credit card.
Sure.
But it's just like anything else. You have to establish credit in your business name, just like you want to establish a personal name. You're probably not going to be able to go out and get a mortgage on a house if you've never had credit in your
name.
It's the same thing if you want a bigger line of credit or a loan in your business name. And people don't necessarily understand that. So even if it's a small credit card, and even if you're going to pay it off every month, establish credit in that. And it's shocking. We talked about whether we're lending or not. Just in the Southeast alone, I have about $4 million worth of approved credit to the customers have turned down.
That they just haven't tapped yet?
No, they don't even take.
They don't even take it.
They won't even take it. And it's in the form of different size credit cards. And we get all the time, well, I already have enough credit cards, but they're in their personal name. And I don't, you know, and they just don't understand. I mean, $4 million there's probably a lot of small business owners right. I'll take that $4 million.
That's what could be make or break, you know, payroll, yeah, you know?
And some of them are $3,000 lines, some are $10,000 lines. But
it doesn't matter, right? Because if it's a $3,000 line today, it could be a $10,000. Yeah. Online a year from now.
Yeah. And another one, and obviously we would love to do it at Wells Fargo, but if you're going to do that, the other thing for small business owners, when you have the credit card, make sure there's some sort of rewards program. It's no different than personal. And I get a lot of small business customers that tell us, well, you know what, I don't want to deal with that. I pay it off every month. Well, then why are you using your own money for it? Right, you can do a credit card, and there's cash back options, there's points options, so you pay it off, but then you get 5% back.
Right.
You know, so it's the same kind of thing. So just because you are establishing credit doesn't mean you're paying interest. If anything, you can use somebody else's money to make you money.
Right, and it gives you the latitude to kind of float for 30 days a lot of times.
Absolutely.
So what about SBA lending? Because I'm under the impression you don't have to have Jeff Hanna kind of money to go into business if you can have someone help you navigate the SBA terrain. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. SBA is a great option. We already mentioned we are the number one SBA lender in the country. We are the number one SBA lender here in the state of Georgia, and our people can help navigate through that. So SBA obviously is the one that is insuring and guaranteeing it on the back end, but you'll work with our bankers and to help kind of navigate through that. And we have specific people that specialize in the SBA to help you kind of navigate that world, because it is working with the government. There's a few extra forms you got to fill out.
But I would think that it's a benefit to work with you guys or people who know what they're doing, as opposed to me just going online, printing out some forms, because if I miss one box, that could set me back weeks or if not months.
Yeah, we have absolutely. We have specialized people that if that is the right road for you, that help you navigate that. That's all they do. They only deal with SBA, seeing that they know the ins and outs.
Right.
Man, this guy knows a lot. We got to have him back.
I know. You seem to know a lot about this.
So, no, you should come back with a delighted customer or something sometime, maybe, and hear about the banking relationship, or maybe one of your business specialists. Don't you think that would make for a good segment?
Yeah, or do you have, I'm sure you have clients here in town that use you, that have used your services?
Well, I think you're about to talk to one of them just a little bit.
Oh. Good plug for Jeff.
Yeah, he was poor before he met Sean, right? Well, before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you or their local branch. They reach out, they can have a substantive conversation about any of these topics, whether it's if and how they should get involved with the chamber, or whether they should talk to someone about SBA lending or any of these other services that you guys
provide. Absolutely. I'll give you a couple things. Obviously, you can go into any of the Wells Fargo stores and just ask for the business specialist in that store or the someone that specializes in small business.
Right.
We have our website, obviously, www.wellsfargo.com/biz. And I will personally give out my personal email, because if you want to be connected and if you're like, you know, I just don't want to deal with that kind of stuff and you want me to find a banker for you, you can email me at Sean. It's sean.maybe@wellsfargo.com, and I'll be happy to find someone to connect you with you. And if you're not sure exactly where you want to end up, I'll have a conversation with you, and we'll make sure you get to the right person.
Now, you mentioned some events you guys sponsor through the chamber. The best place to go for that would be to the Metro Chamber?
Yep, go to the Metro Chamber, and there's lots of great events. We sponsor a great deal of them. We have a fall series that's starting to come up. Those dates have not been selected yet, but we're going to be doing
the
whole
series.
It's an ongoing series. You can find all that information at the Atlanta Chamber website.
The cost on that, it varies? Or
If you are a Metro Atlanta Chamber member, it is free.
Wow.
And that is the other piece that I will tell you, is if you are not an Metro Atlanta Chamber, sorry, I haven't had my coffee this morning, go to a Wells Fargo, folks, and we are members, and we will bring you for free.
As a guest of ours.
So if you go and talk to a banker and say, listen, I'm interested in the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and I'd like to go see what they have to offer, our bankers will get you involved and will bring you for free so you can get a taste of what they do. Because we're that sure that organizations like that can help.
Wow, that's a great service, just that.
Well, Sean, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. And when Jay wakes up, we should call him and thank him for helping us get this coordinated from whatever beat he might be on this week, right?
Absolutely. You might want to wait till noon to wake up Jay.
Hey, how about hanging out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
Would love to.
Terrific. So, Lee, he's here.
Yes.
The trade show guy that we keep talking about. We've been talking about this guy for weeks.
He's like a mythological figure.
Ever since we got the brochure, which is essentially a coffee table book. But, you know, I met this gentleman very briefly when I did that big keynote address that I keep telling you about with that crowd at downtown Atlanta.
Right. At the chamber.
We refer that to that as Stone's keynote. They gave me 3 minutes to talk about being on the radio. We got to talk a little bit about trade shows and trade show strategy, and that's a real important topic to all of our listeners and
right,
and
especially in this
well.
Market. This is one of the big trade show markets in the country.
Absolutely. So without further ado, please let me introduce the president, the grand poobah of Nuance International, Mr. Jeff Hanna. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Stone. Appreciate that.
Well, I've really been looking forward to having you on. I've been telling the guys around, I said, we're going to get the trade show guy here. Come look at his brochure, you know.
Yeah.
So we've been very excited. So give us a little bit of a feel for what you're out there doing for folks.
Well, we have a good time at Nuance International, and we're doing exhibit work all over the world. We work in about 70 countries around the world, design and build exhibits for trade shows. That's a big part of our business. And then we also do interior work as well on an international basis. So we have a lot of fun and face a lot of challenges, never the same day twice.
How'd you get into this business?
Well, my background is in design. I went to Georgia Tech and studied architecture. Some of us call it architorture.
I never heard that. That's good.
Find out that the building is open 24 hours a day, and there's a reason for that. It's a great program, but it's very intense. And I graduated with a bachelor's degree in industrial design and started out in this industry designing exhibits. Got into project management and creative direction and so on. And that's sort of how I got my start in the business.
Now, what are some of the challenges when you work in a trade show environment? Is it the space constraints or what?
Yeah, there are often space constraints. There's visibility issues. There's location in the hall where the traffic patterns are going. Things like that that you have to pay close attention to. Often there's columns in the hall, depending on where it is. And then when you get into the international arena, you find that there are many other challenges, and people often make mistakes culturally. They make mistakes with logistics, shipping, and doing all sorts of things that and get into situations that they really don't expect and get in over their heads. Make a lot of mistakes and don't have a very good experience oftentimes.
I'll tell you what, you screw up the shipping, I bet the whole opera falls apart with a trade show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I got to ask you a trade show strategy question. I've never actually had a real job. I've been in the training industry my entire life, and I've been to a few trade shows to try to promote those businesses. And one of the guys that I worked for at one time, his strategy was we were in the training business. He said, we're not going to training trade shows. We're going to other trade shows, like a tool trade show, where we're the only training or one of the few training people there so that we really stand out. What do you think about that idea?
I think it's a good strategy. If you've got the ability to get in front of some of the people that you want to get in front of, you know, then all more power to you. Go for it. I mean, I think it's a good strategy, and some people do that. So there's a lot of different things that you can do. Determining what kind of shows to go to and how to have a presence at those shows. I mean, we find that, for example, in Europe and in Asia as well, but really in Europe, hospitality is an important thing. So people often ignore that here in the United States, and when they go to do shows over there, they don't realize how important that hospitality might be and really don't capitalize on that aspect of their attendance at the show.
But so you're talking about something separate and apart from a booth, like before and after, or having some like service inside your booth, or what do you mean by hospitality?
Could be. A lot of exhibitors in Europe serve food and drink and things like that to attract people into their shows, so or into their booth. So, and we call it stand internationally, but to get them in the stand to attract attendees there so they can have conversation. Because a lot of times what happens in European countries, in Latin American countries, also in Asia, people, well, in the United States, we tend to be very transactional. You want to walk in a booth, hand somebody a business card or get their business card or swipe their badge and move on. In a lot of those other countries, they are really focused on developing some kind of rapport and relationship with the people before they start to do business. And that comes with sitting down, having a conversation, having something to drink, having a snack, and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit longer process, and it's more relationship building than it is just transactional. So we try to help companies that are doing that sort of exhibiting overseas to focus on what they need to know when they go into those kind of environments so they're better prepared and actually fit in to the environment that they're going into.
Now, when you're working with a company maybe that is kind of new to the trade show world, can you talk about how you kind of explain to them the benefits of trade shows as being part of their marketing mix?
Well, companies that are new often, you know, they don't realize the value of the face-to-face experience. And there was some conversation a number of years ago in the industry about how long are trade shows going to keep going. We've got the ability to do virtual shows. We've got social media explosion.
Right, like webinars, and, you know, a lot of those things are popping up where the, I guess they're trying to reach as many people as possible, but then they get rid of the face-to-face element of it.
Right, and there were people talking about, well, trade shows may go away, travel costs are too expensive, especially after 9/11. We saw a lot of shows cancel and close down, but that really was a temporary lapse because trade shows are back and they're as strong as ever.
Is it because now, like, maybe only leadership's going? Like, maybe earlier it became like kind of a junket where they're bringing like a million people and it was like kind of slash vacation slash work. And now it's really more focused on business because people are watching their budgets more, so they're sending more and more key people, so more and more business really is getting done?
Yes, I agree. I think it is people are being more cautious about how they travel and who goes to shows and what kind of value they're going to bring out of it. But according to studies, 99% of people that do face-to-face marketing in the exhibit arena do realize significant value from the dollars spent in it. So it is a really good return on investment. But one of the problems is sometimes when exhibitors are attending a trade show and they have a booth and they get badges swiped, we've actually gotten packets of all their leads back that they left at the show. Because
but they didn't bring it with them?
No. And we said, well, don't you
why
need,
are they
isn't
there?
This an important part of your experience?
Wow.
And so, yeah, oftentimes
so the
people,
follow-up is lacking sometimes.
The follow-up is very poor, and they don't know how to convert the leads into the next steps. And so oftentimes, though, people get roped into working a trade show booth, and they might be traveling around, and somebody says, well, you've got to go work the booth and spend your 8 hours on the show floor. And really, they're there just because they have to be, and they're not really realized the potential
the value
of it.
Right.
But trade shows really... nowhere else in an environment can you go and spend a day or two walking around and learn everything you possibly can learn
right.
about that industry.
Right.
You can see all the new products. You can network with basically all the players in the industry. You can see all the trends. You can just learn tremendous amount and generate a lot of business in those kind of environments. So there's no replacement for that. So social media is great, and you can leverage social media with your presence into the trade show arena to help drive more traffic, doing pre-show promotions and giveaways and things like that to drive more traffic and more attendees to your exhibits. But trade shows are certainly strong, and they're continuing to do well, and I don't think that's going to diminish at all.
So speak a little bit, if you would, to that. To what should we do in general pre-show and post-show to really get the full value for the investment that we're making?
I bet you that, just that the thinking in those terms, right, where you're looking
just even
at
having
it,
that conversation.
The pre, the actual event, and the post, if you look at it in those terms, you're probably close to being almost there, right?
Yeah,
there,
absolutely, right? Because everybody is going to have a different reason for going. Some are just making some brand awareness. Some are going to be really launching a new product. So there's a lot of different reasons why you're going to go, but the more effective job you do of pre-show planning and sort of crystallizing the vision of why you want to be there and what you want to get out of the show is going to make it a much more effective experience. And then you do the training as well. We found we were doing an exhibit for DirecTV in Latin America where we had people giving away trinkets at the show. Basically, they were standing around the exterior of the booth handing stuff to people in the aisles, and what we were really trying to do was get people sitting in the sofas
in the
watching
DirecTV.
But they were misusing the way that it was designed. So we said, look, get everybody sitting on the sofas in the booth, and suddenly it changed the whole dynamic, and everybody started coming in, sitting down. So crystallizing the vision of what you want to achieve at the show, then implementing it in the right way, and then the follow-up is really key.
Now, when you're working with a client, are you helping them in all of these areas, or are you just helping them in the design area? Because I would think that because you do so many shows, especially all around the world, you have a lot of insights that can kind of speed up their learning curve dramatically.
We do often help them in all of those areas, and in some cases we don't. I mean, there are times where we're implementing a design. We work with a lot of exhibit houses in the United States. We find there are a lot of exhibit houses in the United States that say they're international, and they do maybe two or three international projects a year, but they don't really have the expertise and the day-to-day experience of handling multiple international projects, so they'll turn to us to help them implement that for their client. And sometimes we might be working behind the scenes helping those exhibit houses in the United States implement their project in Sao Paulo or Hong Kong or wherever it might be. So
do you ever run into any scary situations over there across the pond in some of these countries?
We have had a few scary situations.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we were working in Bangkok, doing some work in the tobacco industry, which is kind of controversial in and of itself. We were organizing an event over there, and a lot of people were against the fact that a tobacco industry show was being held in Bangkok. So we had rioters, we had 135 armed police officers guarding the building, and they were knocking down barriers and so forth. So you never know what you're going to face when you're doing international work. And the show went on, and we made it. But yes, it was a very challenging experience.
So your firm has worked all around the world. Like you were saying, some people say, "Oh, we're international," and they've done one show in England, and they call themselves international. You guys have been everywhere, right?
Right. Our parent company, Gielissen, which is in the Netherlands, is based in Eindhoven, is pronounced Gielissen, if I'm doing a decent job with my Dutch pronunciation. Gielissen has been in business for 75 years, and they're probably the third largest interiors and exhibition firm in Europe. And we were acquired by Gielissen in 2011 to help expand their reach. And now we have a total of 10 offices around Europe, in the Middle East, and now in the United States here with Nuance. And but we work in 70 countries on a regular basis.
So, we call it Hannah Helison around here.
Okay. That'll work.
So how did you get in this line of work? What were you doing before you did this, or have you always kind of been in this arena?
The architect guy.
Well, started out studying.
I know, but how do you make the jump from architect to this?
Because you got into trade shows, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was paying attention. Trade shows.
Started with a company called Nth Degree. It used to be called IND Group at the time, but many people that are in the industry, everybody knows Nth Degree. Great company, and Jack McEntee and Pat Alacqua have really made their mark on the industry, and so worked with them for a number of years, managing programs for Intel and MCI and Qualcomm, companies like that, doing their worldwide trade show programs. So that's sort of how I cut my teeth.
And then you went out on your own?
Yeah. In 2006, we branched out and started Nuance International. Then shortly thereafter, we opened an office in London and then one in Abu Dhabi. We were doing quite a bit of work there.
That first international? Like, it's one thing to work here in the States, and you probably got good at knowing the ins and outs here, but that first job outside of this country.
They look at you funny when you order grits, I can tell you that.
That's kind of a leap of faith that you can really pull this off, right? I guess you started attending events internationally so you can get the lay of the land there. How'd that
I did,
evolve?
But I had a good mentor, a guy by the name of Harvey Friedman, who is still a good friend and mentor of mine in the industry, took me on my first international show, which was in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
You notice how he says it. He doesn't say it like the guy from Marietta, right?
So that was my first experience. We were doing a stand down there, and got to see the Rio de la Plata, which is a large river coming into Buenos Aires there. And interesting experience, and so learned from doing small exhibits for the first time overseas. You know, I knew the metric system and so on, but you just...
That's important.
I knew there was a reason
metric
for
system.
That. So I got to know, what compelled you to start working with Sean and his crowd? Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, of course, every business needs a banker.
So, right.
And I think Wells Fargo, well, actually, at the time, it was under a different name prior to, so we started some years ago and have had a good relationship there, but we were looking for a good, solid business bank company that could handle international transactions. And because that's what we do, we have a lot of money in and out all over the world and doing foreign currency exchange and things like that. So
they lived up to the advanced press of being really strong locally, but also having all the advantages and economies of scale of being able to work internationally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The nice thing was that Jeff and I had met actually a couple days ago at an Atlanta Chamber event as well, and so not knowing we were going to be on the show together.
Yeah, absolutely. I said, hey, you look familiar.
So I got to believe this design element really is critical to the success of your trade show and thinking through the strategy. I know when we do trade shows, we pride ourselves on the fact that we can be very flexible and we can actually do trade show radio in a very small space.
Right.
But, you know, you start doing something for a larger company, a bigger concern, design would be a very important element of having, like, radio in your trade show. And, I mean, we wouldn't have the first clue, right?
Well, that's the thing that when we started doing it, you know, it was new to us in these different venues. But after a while, then it's like, oh, we've been to the World Congress Center. We've been to the Cobb Energy Center. So you kind of get the lay of the land. I'm sure that is with you. You're already comfortable in these different foreign countries because you've been doing it in there before. It's not your first time there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the...
That's a huge advantage for your clients. I mean, that saves them a lot of hassles and mistakes.
Yeah, it does. It's a big part of the value add that we bring.
Right.
We're doing shows right now. We're working on some proposals, actually, for some large multi-story exhibits in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress.
Did you say multi-story?
Yeah.
Like inside a trade show?
Yeah.
Multi-story.
We often do two-story and three-story exhibits in the telecom industry. So we...
Holy cow!
A lot of times it's hard to explain to people that go to shows in the U.S., especially if it's mostly pipe and drape or what we call shell scheme exhibits. We do a lot of larger exhibits. We do chalets for air shows. We did one actually for the state of Georgia a couple of years ago in Dubai with Governor Perdue. And so that was a good experience. We took him on helicopter rides and showed him the city and also had built a chalet for the state of Georgia there where there was a delegation from the state that was there trying to generate more business for the state of Georgia. So that was very effective. But we often do larger exhibits. But having knowledge of the show halls is very effective. So the one we're working on right now, one of the ones we're working on in Barcelona, there's two halls in Barcelona, two main halls besides the hotel shows, two that are called Fira de Barcelona. And so if you get on a taxi cab out of the airport and say, take me to the Fira de Barcelona, they're going to ask you which one because there's two different ones. And one's called the Gran Via and one's called the Montjuïc. So you really have to know ins and outs. I mean, there's a elevated walkway through some of the halls in Gran Via. You often have issues about, does the electricity come from the floor ports or does it come from the ceiling? Does it come from columns?
So do you want your guy learning on the fly or you want somebody that's already been
doing it? No, I want somebody that knows that territory and can make that call and grease the skids. Mm-hmm. That would be a nightmare. I mean, I think I can sit down and conduct a decent interview, but the rest of it, I need to leave to somebody that knows what they're doing.
Exactly. So when you go to market... is it just word of mouth at this point for you guys? I mean, you've been doing this for a while, and you partnered with this huge firm.
Yeah, we do have a lot of word of mouth, but we're doing some stuff in social media. We're listed in exhibitor marketplace.
Are there like trade shows for exhibitors? Like for you?
Actually, there are.
You kind of show your wares to other people?
Yes, there are.
Really?
So the biggest show the biggest show in the United States is called Exhibitor Show. And most all of these shows have an educational component or a congress that goes along with the show itself. And so Exhibitor Show has been around for a number of years. It's the largest one in the United States of its kind for people in the industry. And I've been speaking there since 1999 on various topics, everything ranging from international budgeting to cultural aspects of doing business around the world. So I just was in Chicago last week doing a mini seminar for Exhibitor in the Fast Track series that they have around the region, regional activities they have. So there are shows. There's a big one in Europe as well called EuroShop that we often attend or exhibit in. So, yeah.
So how does this thing work? Maybe someone gets a chance to hear about you through a radio show, or they meet you at the chamber, or maybe Sean or somebody on his team puts you in touch with somebody that really ought to be using your services. Walk us through that engagement or that relationship a little bit. How does that unfold?
Well, generally, we would have a meeting with them to find out what kind of things they're involved in, what they're wanting to achieve. Often, it's very specific. They've been given a task or decided as a company they're going to attend a show in Abu Dhabi, for example, and we'll take a briefing from them and find out what their objectives are, what they want to achieve, how large of an exhibit space they might have, and start to develop concepts for that, put together budgeting, put together a whole proposal that includes everything from graphic design to the whole booth installation, dismantle, all the way through the show. And then, you know, of course, if we get the project, then we're off and running and we implement it. We've got on-site project management. We've got a team in Abu Dhabi, actually a growing team, an office over there. So they'll manage that locally and be on-site with the client. And the client shows up, put their product out or whatever it might be. And often that may be a 2 or 3 day process, actually, of putting the product out. And then they have a show, and we dismantle. And we do a lot of build and burns outside the United States, what they're called build and burn, but they're temporary use. Whereas in the United States.
So it's like a one-shot deal?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but some of them are repurposed, like you can use them in different.
Yeah, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's not really that they're burned at the end or thrown away, but the materials are recycled, but you're not necessarily owning the property. The United States mindset typically is where you capitalize the purchase of an exhibit and you amortize it over a 3-year period.
So you use it multiple times or parts of it multiple times?
Right. Then you have storage, shipment, refurbishment, and so on. And outside the United States, in most every location, the main way of doing it is a temporary one-time use kind of rental.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more?
Well, they can contact us in our office in Lawrenceville. Our number there is 678-376-1008, or they can find us on the web at Nuance International. That's N-U-A-N-C-E international.com. Or for short, it's nuanceintl.com.
Jeff Hanna, ladies and gentlemen, the bridge between Lawrenceville and Abu Dhabi.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for coming down and visiting with us, man.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Yes, sir. You going to hang out with us while we visit with our last guest this morning?
Absolutely, yes.
Terrific.
Thank you.
So, Lee, have you learned anything this morning?
Yeah, tons. So, I mean, I didn't realize how much detail there are when you're doing something international and how important it is to have somebody that knows what they're doing to kind of quarterback that.
Well, I think that's the theme throughout the entire segment this morning is you need somebody. I mean, we do what we do, right? But you need to have people that know what they're doing, that you can trust, that have your best interest at heart to help you navigate arenas that you might not know so much about.
Exactly.
So that's what makes this show a lot of fun. Bringing it home for us this morning, Lee, we do have the gentleman with business development with Possible Now. So we're going to find out what's possible now with Mr. Rob Tate. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Thanks for the intro.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Thanks for being so patient. I saw you're nodding your head. I think you might have been taking some notes. You get anything out of those last two segments?
Learned a lot from both these guys. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, what is Possible Now?
Well, we're based here in Duluth, and really our focus is around helping, especially direct marketers, deliver the most personalized message that they can to their customers. And the way that we do that is using preference management. And when you're in marketing today, you hear a lot of buzzwords around personalization, how companies are making their best educated guess on what communication is right for you. They're using inferential data, website traffic, transaction histories to make their best guess. And our approach is a little different and hold the phone. But what we say is just ask your customers. You know,
well, now there's an idea.
Wow. Yeah. Ask your customers. You better write that down.
Even Sean's writing that one down.
Yeah.
Ask your customers. Right.
So that, you know, it's a little different spin. There are certainly some implications for how you do that around consumer privacy, how you're able to use a multi-channel effort to communicate. And so through our My Preferences platform, that's what we're focused on.
Now, who is your typical customer or client?
Large direct marketers in both B2B and B2C environments. We do a lot of work in the banking and financial services space, a lot of work in insurance, telco, home services, cable and satellite providers.
Now, when you're working with them, they typically already have an existing plan, right?
Absolutely.
So they're moving to you because they're having a problem with their plan or it's not working as well as they'd like. What's their pain point for them to engage with you?
Well, I would say that there's a lot of steam behind preference management initiatives, and that's what we call our unique niche in the marketplace, enterprise preference management,
right,
and how they're leveraging these multi-channel communications for not just opt-out but opt-in. And everyone is marketing today. Everyone is trying to figure out how to personalize their communications based on what's most relevant to the consumer. But again, preference management is fairly new to them. So in the cases where they have an existing strategy in place, we can support that in a number of different ways. But we're also seeing a big movement in the marketplace where this is just coming out for a lot of companies.
So what's the story with this customer experience summit thing you got going? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's the Customer Experience Marketing Summit. It's here in Atlanta, September 19th and 20th.
It's an actual event or it's a virtual event?
It's an actual event. Okay. So we're we're thought leaders in the space around preference
management.
Did you
guys use Jeff's firm?
You
can finance it with Sean. And you know what? We'll do radio in the booth. We'll hook
there
you up,
go.
Man.
That's it.
No, we'd love to have everybody join us. You know, our kind of our tagline for the event is where personalization, preferences, and privacy come to meet. And we've got some great speakers that are going to be there, some customers of ours, and just general thought leaders in this area from companies like Intuit, Symantec, Coca-Cola, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and others. And actually, for guests of the show or folks that are listening in, we do extend a discount. We've got a discount code. If you go to our website, CEMSummit2012.com, and enter discount code 300, it's actually $300 off that registration.
Now, is this an event that you're putting on or you're just participating in?
No, we're putting it on. This is a big, we see the big movement in the marketplace, and this is attempt at some thought leadership beyond what we do with our blogging, with articles and thought leadership in that area.
So you put on event, is this the first time you've done an event of this?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so this is the first go for you. So it's important to get the word out about getting people come, and you're having big speakers?
We are, absolutely.
And plus big corporations that are involved in this space?
Absolutely.
So I want to dive into this idea of getting customer preferences a little bit. How do you get them to really tell you what they really want? That's my first question.
And not just to get you off their back so they can get access to the information that
right.
they want.
Exactly.
There's got to be some science behind that.
Yeah,
right?
And one idea that kind of backs up what you're talking about there is the idea of reciprocity. And a lot of people, there's always the what's in it for me question. And a lot of people will offer up a discount or a coupon to get an email address or a preference on how you want to be communicated with. Our approach is a little different. If we do our job as marketers and actually hold up our end of the bargain and are able to deliver messages to you that are relevant, that are based on what you want to hear about, consumers are very open to sharing those preferences. The key is not being disruptive to your customer experience. For the big companies that we work with today, there's no shortage of data that's out there. There's no shortage of touch points for your customers, whether it's in a bank, whether it's on a website, whether it's calling into a call center. It's about looking at each one of those touch points and collecting information that's valuable at that point in time.
Now, is it something that I would think that bigger companies would have more patience than smaller companies, that maybe the first touch you capture an email address and maybe the next touch you capture a first name and you've kind of got a patient long-term perspective of trying to data mine the important information rather than a lot of small companies, you know, they want to get to the I'm going to marry you before they have first drink with the person.
Yeah, that's the analogy we use a lot, and it's especially important in social media as well. You know, it's a very relevant channel, especially big corporations are trying to figure out what to do in that arena and how much is too much. You know, how are we going to get information that's relevant without overwhelming the customer?
Right. You don't want to scare them away right off the get-go, but you want to just slowly integrate them and feel comfortable with you and earn their trust over time. And then you can slowly gather more and more data.
Exactly.
So how do you go about selling your services? I mean, it's going to be a non-issue now because you've been on Atlanta Business Radio. But prior to now, you had to get out there and really sell what you were doing. How do you even get on the radar screen of all these big companies you're talking about?
Well, I tell you, it really starts with the vision that we have as a company in this space and the way that we've established ourselves as thought leaders. And that a big part of my job as our company's product evangelist is going out and understanding these problems that companies face as it relates to the way that they manage their data, the way they integrate that in their marketing campaign. So the first step is for us to really be experts on the way that they do that. Beyond that, there are a number of different moving parts as you integrate a plan like this. Usually it's going to come from a marketing department, you know, that has an initiative on the table. An IT organization is going to have to implement. And because there are so many different privacy elements around consumer marketing and the way that you're communicating, usually legal privacy is going to get involved too. So, yeah.
So is that why there's the word compliance on your business card as well? There's like a couple of bullets to talk about compliance. So speak to that a little bit if you would.
Absolutely. So we, that's where we got our start 12 years ago as a company. Huh. Yeah. We started out really helping direct marketers with issues around direct marketing compliance and consumer privacy specifically. That is much more than an opt-out issue today. It's about how you manage opt-ins and express consents as well, especially in the banking space with data sharing among affiliates. So that's one example of how that happens. Beyond the technology that we provide, though, we also have a subsidiary called Compliance Point, wholly owned subsidiary, and 100% of their focus is around direct marketing compliance and information security. So we've got a big focus in that area, too.
Now, at this event, can you talk about some of the speakers and some of the topics that they're going to be getting into?
Absolutely. So some of the folks that we have coming and some of the companies that are represented, Intuit, Symantec, Coca-Cola, PricewaterhouseCoopers.
So now, are they coming to share kind of case studies about how they're using the space?
Absolutely. And that's what's most important to people, to be honest, because this is a fairly new topic, a fairly new piece of a lot of marketing strategies that are out there. They want to understand how this has been implemented, how they get organizational buy-in, and what the results are.
And then, so who are the speakers? Are they nationally known speakers? Are there people from your firm? Who do you have to actually speak?
Yeah, we've got a handful of representatives from Possible Now Compliance Point, but the majority are thought leaders from those companies that I mentioned.
Okay.
We're also going to have a gentleman by the name of Hernan Roman. Hernan is a published author. He's written 4 books on voice of customer and opt-in marketing. He's a DMA Hall of Fame member. He's actually going to be our keynote speaker. So we're excited to have Hernan. He's a great partner of ours.
Sounds like a fantastic conference. We're laced with some really important education, and if you take Jeff's advice and feed them,
if you come, you will be fed. That's the good news.
There you go.
And where is it at, and when is it?
It's at the JW Marriott in Buckhead. The dates are September 19th and 20th. Again, we can, in follow-up today, be glad to provide that discount code to listeners.
So and do they learn more at your website, Possible Now, or is there a dedicated website?
You can go to Possible Now or CEMSummit2012.com.
CEM Summit.
Hey, Kevin, and let's post this about this discount code thing. When we post this on the blog, let's get that on there, too.
Absolutely.
Now, when they're attending here, it's a lot of education. Is there an expo portion, or is this just strictly education?
Yeah, it's really education and thought leadership. We have a very limited, I don't think we have too many exhibitors at all beyond the couple sponsors that we have that are going to be there.
Right.
So it's going to be pretty education intensive, a lot of thought leadership from the folks that are going to be there.
And some of the key takeaways that you hope the participants take away?
Yeah, well, our tagline again for the event is where personalization, preferences, and privacy come to meet. All those are key elements of marketing and communications today, and so each of our speakers will speak on elements within each of those.
Nice job on the alliteration, man.
That's good. That's important. Now, one more time, your website?
www.possiblenow.com.
Good stuff. All right, Stone. You had enough?
Yes, sir. I'm ready for a nap. I got up at 3:45 a.m. But this has been a fun, informative show, and I've enjoyed getting to know all of them, and I think it's probably going to be very productive for them to get to know each other better,
right,
too. So this is great, man.
Yep, good
piece of heck out of working, doesn't it?
That's right. All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest today. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.